This is your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Just a reminder, polls are open until 8 p.m. tomorrow night if you are in California. If you're voting by mail on this recall election, your ballot must be postmarked by tomorrow. And don't forget to sign the back of your envelope. It's on the very back. You've got to just sign that. And that's really important. If you are not registered to vote, you can register in person tomorrow. Again, the recall election is tomorrow. Be sure to vote by tomorrow. And we're going to be talking about that on tomorrow's show. Right now, we are going to talk about the water crisis in California, the last state in the nation. And the nation to regulate groundwater. In 2014, the California legislature enacted a package of new laws that aimed to stop groundwater overpumping. As CalMatters' Rachel Becker reports, 7 years later, little has changed for Californians relying on drinking water wells. Depletion of their groundwater continues. Pumping is largely unrestricted, and there are few, if any, protections in place. About 2,700 wells across the state are projected to go dry this year, and if the drought continues, 1,000 more will go dry next year. Also, California lawmakers finished their work for the legislative session on Friday night, and California Democrats failed to pass climate legislation. Joining us now is Rachel Becker, an environment reporter for CalMatters. Hi, Rachel. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you, and thanks so much for your latest piece about groundwater. As you report, for 6 million Californians, groundwater is their only source of water, and their wells are going dry. Can you just tell us, Rachel, why do 6 million people rely on groundwater as their only source of water?
That's a great question, and it really varies across the state. You know, we've got some pretty amazing feats of engineering, piping water north to south from Northern California to Southern California with the State Water Project, with the Central Valley Project. You know, there's aqueducts sipping from the Colorado River, from the Owens Valley. But, you know, this kind of infrastructure doesn't reach everywhere. And for some places, the most available source of water are these vast stores of underground water, of groundwater that just, you know, seeps from the surface and fills the pores and fractures in the earth. And people drill into it and pump it back up for domestic wells, for their households. Some community water systems rely entirely on groundwater. And also agriculture relies on groundwater. So there's a lot of demand on this precious resource that is slow to recover from depletion.
You also report that in a good year, groundwater makes up about 40% of California's water supply. In a bad year like this one, it's close to 60%. So give us an overview of the groundwater situation in California. We've done a lot of shows about groundwater, and also just how by pumping deeper into the ground, the land is actually sinking.
That's right. Yeah, it's called subsidence. And, you know, in parts of the Central Valley, San Joaquin Valley especially, there has been incredible amounts of subsidence viewable, you know, on the ground when it affects infrastructure. You know, canals can crack and aqueducts can sink. You can also see it from satellite. Groundwater is a continuous source of water for some communities that rely on it entirely, like we just talked about. But it's also kind of a stopgap during drought when surface water supplies dwindle. And we're seeing supplies from the State Water Project. We're seeing supplies from the federal water supplies from the Central Valley Project really dwindle for folks who need it for both community water supplies and for agriculture. And as a result, people turn to groundwater and they wind up pumping more. And that during the last drought, we saw that accelerate subsidence, especially in the Central Valley. So there's really this balancing act, you know, as surface water goes down, groundwater pumping goes up, and you see depletion accelerate. And that's something that California is really wrestling with again.
You know, this is a tough one for people in cities to wrap their head around, because we turn on the tap and the water comes out. But people who rely on wells have such a different experience. You write about Kelly O'Brien, and she lives in Glenn County, which is about 100 miles north of Sacramento. You write that her well had been in its death throes for days before its pump finally gave out over Memorial Day weekend. Over the past month, Kelly O'Brien has had only two real showers, one that costs $15 at a health club, and bucket washes with water from a neighbor's well heated on the stove most days. So this crisis is hitting people right now. I mean, to think that someone like Kelly O'Brien has had just two real showers in the past month in a state like California, the fifth largest economy in the world.
Yeah, when I visited her, she told me that the clothes she was wearing were her last clean clothes before she had to do laundry, and that she had showered at a friend's house the night before. It's really amazed me visiting Glenn County and speaking with a lot of folks who relied on domestic wells was just kind of how well they knew their water. You know, they could just rattle off the depths of their well, you know, when they moved there, how the groundwater had changed during the last drought, how far it had sunk down, you know, maybe beneath the reach of their pump, whether they had to drill their well deeper. They knew their neighbor's well depths. There was just such intimate knowledge of their groundwater because it's so critical. And if that water level drops below the depth of their pump, you know, their pump starts sucking air and they stop getting water, or their water pressure drops. You know, if their well's not deep enough, they might start sucking sediments into their pipes. So there's just such kind of a close relationship with their groundwater that folks in cities may not have.
Right, exactly. I mean, you report that Kelly O'Brien tries to avoid outdoor work that would soil her clothes and make her sweat. And of course, where she lives, it is so incredibly hot. She said, if we had the rains and the snowfall and everything else that we needed in order to fill our reservoirs, we wouldn't be talking today. And she also asks, how many acres of almonds are we going to actually put in this county before people say uncle? Mm-hmm. I think that just says a lot. I mean, like you say, someone like Kelly is so connected to her water, and she knows what's going on when it comes to who's using most of the water in California.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, hearing kind of from folks in Glenn County, there was this kind of balancing act between the agricultural needs for water and the domestic needs for water, and there was just this tension because agriculture is the biggest industry in Glenn County. And, you know, was the whole area kind of the Glenn County of today was really sort of created by irrigated agriculture over the course of the 20th century. And so, you know, but now they're, especially when surface water supplies dwindle, there just does not seem to be enough for both. And so, Glenn County's Groundwater Sustainability Agency is kind of in the planning stages right now of trying to figure out how to bring that groundwater into balance.
You interviewed Mike Vera Skagen, who grows almonds and prunes around Orlin and Artois, and he said he doesn't have enough surface water and his wells are producing less during the drought, so he had to start buying water from other growers and irrigation districts. Without it, he said, I wouldn't have enough to irrigate all my orchards after harvest, do some of the post-harvest irrigation, which is critical for setting next year's crop. You know, we talked about this in our last segment about the Colorado River, Rachel. Do we know how many crops are very water intensive, like alfalfa and almonds, and how many crops are not as water intensive?
That is a great question. I think to really look at that, you'd need to look at how the balance of crops have changed over time. My colleague Julie actually just put up a really great story, Julie Cart, looking at how growers have been and scientists have been sort of working together to try and figure out how to adapt agriculture and growing practices for this more water scarce future that we're finding. But one issue that came up a lot in my conversations in Glenn County that I thought was fascinating was sort of this double-edged sword of drip irrigation and micro-emitter sprinklers used for orchards especially. These systems often tends to favor groundwater because it's a continuous supply. You don't need to rely on when the irrigation district is going to send you surface water. It also, maybe may have less sediment, so it's not going to clog those little holes that you need to stay open for the water to come through. But these systems are so efficient that they wind up not recharging the groundwater as much as flood irrigation that, you know, may have historically been used for other crops like alfalfa, for instance. And so you've got this kind of double-edged sword of like sometimes more efficient irrigation systems might actually be harder on the groundwater.
Huh. Okay, well, that's really interesting. The other thing I wanted to ask you related to crops is we were talking to Abram Lustgarten from ProPublica, and he said that when you think about states being able to, state officials having the ability to say, you know, we're at a point where growing alfalfa and shipping it overseas for cattle does not make sense anymore. We're going to help you to transition to a crop that requires less water. Do state officials in California have the right to do that?
That is something that I know that is being discussed at the local levels, not necessarily telling people what to farm, but figuring out kind of water allocations. Part of what the Groundwater Sustainability Act does is it tasks these local agencies called groundwater sustainability agencies with bringing their groundwater into balance over the next, 20 something years. And each groundwater sustainability agency is tackling the problem slightly differently, in a way that approaches their kind of unique situations. And some areas, for instance, are looking into allocating a certain amount of water and charging people extra if they go beyond it. Some are placing a fee. Others are, requiring monitoring for how much water is being used. And so that could wind up affecting what people grow. Some groundwater sustainability agencies are also looking into water markets where, folks who may not for whom it may not make financial sense to continue growing might be able to sell their water to growers with higher value crops. So we're seeing this kind of question play out in different ways across these local agencies. And I think that, it really kind of remains to be seen as these plans really start getting approved and implemented, what that's going to mean for the crop makeup going forward. Some agencies may also wind up paying growers to fallow their land, and that kind of opportunity for fallowing may affect what people decide to grow because, you can't really fallow an orchard. That's a continuous crop.
Today, we are speaking with Rachel Becker, an environment reporter with Cal Matters, and her piece, California enacted a groundwater law 7 years ago, but wells are still drying up and the threat is spreading, is at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions about California and the water crisis, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Faye in San Francisco. Hi, Faye. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I was just wondering if you had any updates on the almond industry in California. I heard on your show a few years ago that I believe it's the Resnicks were planting almond trees in the driest part of the Central Valley, and 85% of their almonds were being exported to China. So this is kind of similar to the alfalfa, whatever, grown in Arizona and being shipped to the Middle East or Asia. And I'm just wondering if there's any update on that.
Yeah,
almond.
Thank you so much for that. In fact, I remember doing that show. We talked about a Mother Jones piece called Meet the California Couple Who Uses More Water Than Every Home in Los Angeles Combined, how mega farmers Linda and Stuart Resnick built their billion-dollar empire. We'll link to this at Your Call Radio. It's such an important piece. Do you have any updates on the Resnicks and what they're up to? Have they had any water limits? Do you know, Rachel?
I have not specifically reported on the Resnicks. No, it's an interesting question. I'll have to look into it.
Well, I just did a search, and it looks like their company bought a wine estate in Napa. And according to Calcoast News, the Resniks are among very large donors in Newsom's anti-recall fight. I'm guessing they're for Gavin Newsom, but these days you never know. Let's see. They've contributed $250,000 to Governor Gavin Newsom's anti-recall campaign, and we'll also post that on our website, and we'll be sure to ask Ethan to focus on donors tomorrow. We will look into this because it's really important, Faye. So thank you so much for that question, and we'll do another show about who's using the most water. In our remaining moments, Rachel, let's talk about Sigma, because this is really important. As you report, California was the last state in the nation to regulate groundwater. And Sigma are laws that give local groundwater agencies in critically overdrafted basins 26 years until 2040 to achieve sustainability and stop impacts of overdraft from worsening. You report that Sigma must be formed for all high and medium priority basins in the state. These GSAs, groundwater sustainable agencies, must develop and implement groundwater sustainable plans for managing and using groundwater without causing undesirable results. So significant groundwater level declines, groundwater storage reduction, seawater intrusion, water quality degradation. Give us just a quick overview of what these areas have to come up with by the year, what is it? Until 2040. And we'll talk about also that politicians say, ooh, we thought we had time, but we actually realize we don't.
Yes. Yeah, so the most critically overdrafted basins had to turn in a plan. Last year, the less critically overdrafted basins have until this coming January, I believe, 2022, to submit plans for how they intend to bring their basins back into balance and prevent some of those, undesirable consequences you mentioned, including seawater intrusion, land subsidence, poor water quality. The Department of Water Resources is currently evaluating those plans, it's approved two so far and sent two back for more work. And some of the issues that it highlighted were the fact that the groundwater sustainability agencies hadn't really addressed the drinking water impacts of groundwater depletion satisfactorily. And so going forward, the groundwater sustainability agencies are going to have to start implementing these plans. And that means something different, really, in every single basin. It's really astounding kind of what sort of a patchwork that's this resulting in terms of regulations, because, there are so many different basins and each one may have multiple groundwater sustainability agencies responsible for it. And so we're seeing really different kind of combinations of monitoring. Some require meters on wells, others are monitoring groundwater use via satellite. We're seeing really different strategies for approaching, limiting groundwater use. Many are focusing heavily instead on groundwater recharge. So, ensuring that in wet years, enough water seeps back into the soil to recharge the basins. And this is sort of a gamble on that we'll have wet years and that there will be sort of the infrastructure to allow for floodwaters to not, run off into and eventually drain into the ocean, but to kind of stay and seep back into the soil. So we're really seeing a combination of strategies. The Public Policy Institute of California did a really interesting analysis of the plans that have been submitted and found that many of them rely, so heavily on groundwater recharge to the point where it's not actually realistic based on the water supply in California. And far fewer reductions in groundwater use are anticipated to come from restrictions in terms of allocations and other restrictions.
Well, let's hear from another caller, Ray in Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I got a couple questions, or maybe one question that kind of bridges the first show and this show. And it has to do with, that we were been talking about the almonds that have been grown and shipped to another country, And then the first show, we talked about how folks from the Middle East and other countries are buying up water resources in the United States. And that's my question kind of there, is why are we selling off our resources to other countries? Why isn't there some kind of, you know, control over that to make sure that, you know, we can serve ourselves, you know, take care of America first? Why are those resources being used as some commodity that's just for sale when really they're needed by our country more as much and probably more deserving?
Well, thank you for that. And if you missed the first part of the show, we learned that a majority of the water used by farms that are using water from the Colorado River goes to growing non-essential crops like alfalfa, and then they're exported to feed animals in the Middle East and Asia. Rachel, have you been able to talk to California politicians about this? Like, why are so many almonds being sent overseas? Why is alfalfa being grown in California to feed cattle in other countries?
I have not spoken to state officials about the exports. It's a really interesting question and something definitely to look into. It is a concern that I heard frequently when reporting the groundwater story, you know, this question of kind of, especially almonds, about exports and, you know, the balance of retaining water in California versus allowing it to be exported.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Rachel Becker is an environment reporter with CalMatters, and you can find her pieces at yourcallradio.org. Ray, we will definitely try to bring politicians on to answer these questions because they're so incredibly important. The other thing that we really would like politicians to address is, you know, why they're taking money from oil and gas and then they're killing climate legislation. This just happened on Friday night. There is an op-ed in the Sacramento Bee by Mary Kriesman, the CEO of the California League of Conservation Voters. And she writes that three Democrats, Majority Leader Bob Hertzberg of Los Angeles, Energy Chair Ben Hueso of San Diego, and President Pro Tem Tony Atkins of San Diego, raked in hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign donations from oil and gas, and Atkins failed to make the climate crisis a priority as the chamber's leader. As her committee assignments gave big oil a bigger voice in policy, Hueso and Hertzberg used their power to obstruct crucial legislation to keep drilling pollution away from marginalized neighborhoods and to phase out production of oil and gas. Atkins then allowed the industry to block and delay every significant climate bill in the Senate from advancing, including legislation to require large corporations to report their total greenhouse gas emissions and to transition buildings to cleaner electric energy. So this is where we're at. Three Democrats have the power to kill important legislation, and they just did it on Friday. We'll link to this SACB op-ed called California's Top Democrats Took Money from Big Oil and Gas, and then climate legislation died. And we're going to try to bring these Democrats on our show to find out why they're doing this at a time when we're facing so many climate crises. So we'll continue to call those Democrats and hopefully they will join our show. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to talk about the important recall election in California. Be sure to get your ballot in by tomorrow. It's got to be postmarked by tomorrow, and then be sure to sign the back of the envelope. If you want to vote in person, polls are open until 8 p.m. tomorrow night. And if you're not yet registered, you can register in person tomorrow. So please be sure to spread the word on that. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr and Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.